Archaeology is the search for fact, not truth.
So forget any ideas you got about lost cities, exotic travel, and digging up the world. We do not follow maps to buried treasure, and X never, ever marks the spot.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Shocking.
Nothing shocks me. I'm a scientist.
You are listening to Think Theory Radio.
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 Radio. Radio. Radio.
Hello and welcome to Think Theory Radio, the show that brings you topics outside the mainstream realm of thought and ideas to make you think. And I'm your host, Damian Perdue, your archaeological guide on this anthropological ride of paleontological delights. Of course, I'm joined by Pauly C.
Yo, yo, yo.
The C stands for corpses.
It's hard.
Because it's archaeology.
Okay. You know,
there's a lot of dead bodies in archaeology and bones.
Absolutely.
Old bones, dusty old bones.
Dusty old bones.
And that voice is Dylan over here hanging out.
Yes, sir.
Fellow CPT co-worker. Jumping
That's
in.
That's right.
And here we were talking about archaeology today, so he said, I gotta get on this one.
Yeah, I got a bone to pick with archaeology.
Hey-o.
I don't believe in no, I do believe in dinosaurs, that all that is real.
But do you believe in space?
I do.
Okay.
At least
right,
as far as
all
I can
right.
see it, yeah.
And you can, then you're welcome on this show.
Oh, true. Thank you. Thank you.
And I know you like cryptoid kind of stuff, right?
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. The cryptid type stuff?
Yeah,
man. Honestly, any type of thing that kind of makes you think, right, about the world and kind of the ways in which theory kind of intertwines with culture and all that other stuff. Absolutely, man. Plus, if I see Mothman, you know, at least I'll be able to talk to him about his history,
you
bro, you know, before he attacks me. Bro.
And to find the archaeology of Mothman. Well, the first, I don't know if this technically is a cryptid, but kind of like relates to it. But it's, I don't know if you've ever heard of Lovelock Cave. It's where the legends of the red-headed giant cannibals refuse to die.
Red-headed giant cannibals?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I saw them open for... Sorry.
I knew you were going there.
Yeah.
For the Misfits at the Metro?
Yeah. No, they wouldn't be a punk band. I think they'd be like... You know, they might be giants, cranberries.
More prog rock, folk, folky.
Weezer, I think I'm thinking like 80s, 90s, like.
Yes, Fish.
Maybe more like college rock band from like late 80s.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like the Pixies came by and they just needed someone in the pinch.
Yeah.
So giant redheaded, what was it? Fine Young Cannibals.
Redheaded Giant Cannibals.
Yeah,
actually, it has like three different band names in there. Well, there's actually a cave in Nevada. Here in the lovely United States.
Cave in Nevada?
Yeah, cave in Nevada. It's called Lovelock Cave.
Okay.
And that's because there was a man named Lovelock, who, and it's also a town named Lovelock, named after this dude, but basically back in the, in 1911, these two miners, James Hart and David Pugh, filed a mineral claim and started mining for bat guano.
Why would he want bat guano?
Oh, because it's great. It's rich in nitrogen, phosphate, and potassium.
I always thought it was bad.
No, you can make explosives out of it.
Okay, so it's...
And it's actually, like, excellent fertilizer.
Yeah. Still and, dangerous. Okay.
Yes,
I
but dangerous, but dangerous. Yes. And they found 10,000... In the spring of 1912, they found 10,000 archaeological specimens... And in 1924, Mark Raymond Harrington returned to the cave and discovered some of the cave's most fascinating relics, a cache of 11 duck decoys fashioned out of real duck skin and feathers.
What?
They were doing it back then, man, thousands or however long ago. And but the legends of the red-headed giants... goes back to the northern Paiute people, the indigenous tribe, and they have a myth of a ancient tribe of red-headed giants that they called the Sitka, who fought against the northern Paiutes in distant times but were eventually banished from the region. And in her book, Fossil Legends of the First American, historian Adrian Mayer explains hair pigment can often turn a dusty red color. So they think maybe that's what they were finding. They found these old bones and thought that it was some giant cave. Supposedly there was a 7-foot, 7-inch tall skeleton that was found. But of course, it's, you know, disappeared. And but it's still, if you look online, like the legends of the giants still persist. And they keep finding a lot of interesting archaeological discoveries in this cave. But I thought it was interesting. It's just kind of on a, it kind of took me down a minor rabbit hole, because I thought, okay, well, if it's, I mean, 7 foot 7 inches as a giant is not, you know, it's not that tall. I mean, it's tall. But there's,
for what era, though?
Well, I mean, back then, but who knows when, you know.
Yeah, that's freakishly tall for now.
Do you know the tallest man ever? Robert Pershing Wadlow.
From downstate. Yeah.
He was almost 9 foot. He was 8 foot, 11 inches.
Yeah.
But and like, there's a guy.
Freakishly tall.
Yeah. There's a dude now, Sultan Koran, who's like 8 foot.
He's like from China or.
I think.
Or where is he from?
I forget. Look him up.
I don't know.
but then I was just like, I was like, well, okay. Because you start thinking about redheads. Right. And
think about them all. Sorry.
The gingers, which I was kind of born one. I still have a little remnants, but I'm mostly turned brown now. But supposedly the gene for redheads started in Central Asia. OK. Now, it just made me think, well, you know, the humans traveled through Central Asia up over the Bering Strait into the Americas. So who knows if there wasn't some ancient redheaded big people that ended up in the Americas, and maybe the, you know, the tribes that came later found some remnants of these, what they thought were giants. They might be giants.
Vikings? I don't know. Like, I mean, what? I don't know.
Well, Vikings were more blondish, I think. But these were from through Central Asia up. Okay. This is where that gene started, was Central Asia, the redheaded gene, the redheaded stepchild. And, but what also is interesting about redheads is that in a lot of different cultures,
maybe some like Russia.
That, yeah. That's what about, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That whole, you know, yeah.
I'm just trying to think
the Stan area, you know, the steppe region, the Stans and stuff, you know, up through Russia and over. But then it's weird because you think the biggest population of redheads is in Scotland.
Yeah.
You know, and then Ireland or whatever. So it's weird that it came, you know, all the way from Central Asia over there and kind of stuck. But in other cultures, the redheaded beard or redheaded person had a lot of prominence. Like in ancient Egypt, Ramses II was a redhead.
Hmm.
And there was another ancient leader it might have been Russia. I can't remember. I was looking at it earlier. But in Islam, if you're an imam, like the you know, priest of Islam, if you have a red beard, you're looked at as more prominent. You have like kind of a higher status. So I just thought it was interesting, like this whole like redheaded giant in the, you know, United States, this legend still persists, and that that gene comes out of Central Asia. So, you know, I don't know. Could be possible they ended up here.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't know what the average height was thousands of years ago, or if we could even really determine that. But there are people that are 9 foot, 8 foot, 7 foot something. So, I mean, if you were that big back then, you would really, really, really appear to be a giant.
Yeah.
Well, so I feel like the giant legend can have some roots in reality.
I got you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, like you and I, in our times, you're thinking about someone that's like 30 feet tall.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah, we're thinking more like science fiction kind of.
Yeah, and this is like 7 feet.
Yeah.
Like, it was a giant. Right. Like,
no, I mean, even if you look short. If you look up pictures of the Robert Wadlow guy.
Oh, he's huge. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but he wasn't like, I don't know. I mean, that
he
was
looks
like
twice the size of other
pituitary
people.
Pituitary gland issue or something.
Yeah, he said he was born normal and then he just kept growing.
Okay.
So who knows what
I mean, he like in his 20s died, didn't he? Like he like needed a cane to walk, like
Yeah. I mean, and that's, yeah, I know. Well, that's why the, you know, the giant legend persists, because they didn't live long. So They were never around.
No one there to dispute it?
Exactly.
On behalf of the giant?
Yep.
We're from the estate of the giant.
Andre the giant.
His name was Robert. Be nice.
It was Andre.
Yeah. It was Andre. Andre, yeah. The giant. Yeah, Mr. the Giant is, right?
And
Hogan versus the giant. Coming to you from Madison Square Garden.
There's also a buddy of mine, famous graffiti writer named Giant from Albuquerque, okay. West Coast, California. Got and then there's brand. Giant Obey Shepherd Ferry, who did the Barack Obama stuff. Yeah.
Change and Hope.
Sticking in the Americas.
Because?
Almost 500 years after the Aztecs were almost wiped out, scientists have confirmed what happened to them. Like we didn't really already know. They were slaughtered by the Spaniards. I mean, yes, but it was the disease. The pestilence that killed them off. And now, you know, through DNA testing, they've figured out it was a bacteria, an enteric fever caused by Salmonella enterica, specifically a subspecies known as Paratyphi C. And it's, you know, how many people that in 5 years, from 1545 to 1550, 15 million Aztecs were killed. 80% of the Aztec population was wiped out.
Wow.
Not just all from the, but a lot of it mostly from this disease. But not, obviously the Spaniards did slaughter a lot of them too as well. But they finally confirmed that, yes, through DNA testing, they did have this bacterial pathogen. And it was from the European colonizers.
Hmm.
That is also confirmed through science.
That's terrible. I'm not going to lie. But it is good to be confirming that, I guess. I don't know. It's kind of, yeah. Diseases are going to be here with us. I also feel like with COVID, it kind of enlightened us, like, are we even really more prepared now, like, than we were really? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah.
I mean, maybe prepared on a scientific level, but not prepared societally.
Yes. Ain't that the truth? The fact that masks and vaccines became, like, a political issue, especially masks, right? Like, when would you want your surgeon not to wear a mask when he's operating on you? I mean, they don't really care about that, but I don't know. It's very strange the way.
And now, you know, what's interesting is, and then we're getting totally off topic, but in D.C., they just passed that Secure D.C. bill where, like, if you're wearing a mask in public, they can arrest you.
What?
Yeah.
Like, so any type of, like, a surgical mask? Or
well,
like
I think it's more like shiesty kind of ski mask thing, supposedly. Crazy. But who knows? They could use it as an excuse to probably lock people up with surgical masks.
Absolutely.
It's all, you know, quote unquote, you know, anti-crime bill. They can also, they're allowed to now kill people in car chases. Anyway, that's off topic. We'll talk about that after the show when we have some beers. sticking somewhat in the Americas, but then connecting it all the way over to the islands of the Easter.
Oh, Easter Islands.
Rapa Nui.
Where is that? I'm not...
Easter Island? You don't know Easter Island?
I don't know. Giant heads sticking out of the ground.
You know the big heads?
Oh, okay. Yeah,
which actually have bodies underneath. That's
they have
cool
bodies
thing.
Underneath? Yeah. I didn't know that.
And nobody knows who built them or carved them or put them there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, it's an island near, New Zealand.
Okay, it's in the New Zealand, like the Eastern.
Australia, Pacific.
Okay. South Pacific.
Yes, South Pacific. There you go. So now they have found obsidian blades. Also, obsidian is like a really cool word. I've always
isn't it made
word.
Of volcanic material?
Yeah.
Okay.
With shiny black kill people. obsidian blades with food traces reveal first settlers of Rapa Nui, East Island, had regular contact with South Americans 1,000 years ago. Mm. So you take that, Columbus. Euro trash. So Anakina is the earliest known settlement of Rapa Nui, and they have found a fusion of cuisine. They even did fusion cuisine. See, back then?
Uh-oh.
You didn't even know.
I did not know. Absolutely, man.
They were a fusion cuisine of plants, people, not meat, native to Polynesia, but also ones indigenous to South America. And researchers discovered the food remains by identifying starch grains clinging to obsidian blades at the archaeological site of Anakina, the earliest known settlement of Rapa Nui, which was occupied from about 81,000 to 1,300, according to the study. And, yeah, it's interesting that, you know, this has been talked about, like, it was considered fringe that anyone outside of Europeans contacted indigenous people in the Americas. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because we even hear about, like, Leif Erikson, who's still, I believe, yeah. like a Viking. But, yeah. I mean, I don't know why it'd be a stretch that other people from different continents, or even with respect to Pangaea, weren't trading or, you know, actually had cultural exchange. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, now we have, well, with the Vikings, at least, there is a fort. There's a Viking fort in Newfoundland.
Really?
That's confirmed to be a Viking headquarters or whatever. So that one is substantiated. There's also, you know,
is that like a port where they would go launch their different, I'm guessing, raids and
they came in and there's different theories that they came and they actually were trading with indigenous people. Then of course there's the ones that like they tried to invade and got chased out. Mm-hmm. Don't really know to the extent of that. There's also theories that the ancient Chinese traveled here back in the day.
That would make sense.
And you know, a lot of it is there's oral histories from, you know, a lot of the indigenous people and the Mayans, Aztecs, into the Native Americans and down in Brazil as well, of these different travelers from other countries. One of the Musas, you know, in not Mansa, you know, Mansa Musa, yeah, but not Mansa Africa. Musa, but it was I believe it was after him. I forget his exact name, that supposedly he wrote in his journals about traveling to a place that was very descriptive of, like, South America.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So was Mansa Musa the king who would go to different places and, like, cause the dollar to drop? Or was, okay,
he was, like, the richest man in history, even to this day.
That's crazy.
Like, he was so powerful that on old European maps, they would just have him, like, in all the part, like, half of Africa. Oh, really? It was like, Mansa Musa.
Oh, man. Is he like the original Jeff Bezos then? Is that?
Oh, yeah.
Is America going to just have Jeff Bezos on there?
He was like Bezos, Musk, Buffett, Jesus. All of them combined. Man. He just had all the gold.
So, they had their own. I know we're getting a little bit off topic and whatnot, but they had a kingdom, I'm guessing, in South Africa where they would.
I think he was more West Africa.
Okay.
But
West Africa,
yeah, I could be wrong. Okay. I think he was more. East Africa, I mean. I'm getting my.
Okay, so like Ethiopia, then,
yes.
And Eritrea. Okay, interesting. Because I know they were one of the few that were never conquered by European. Mm-hmm. The Italians, I believe, tried.
When Haile Selassie fought him off. Ja Rastafari.
I did not know that. Yeah. Okay, that's very interesting.
Yeah, he did a really good speech to the UN, if you ever look up Haile Selassie's speech. It's pretty good.
Definitely will.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we have I have a little bit of ancient weird science. And also some more about Rapa Nui. And what about a Kermit fossil that predates the dinosaurs? That and much more on Think Theory Radio right after this. To Think Theory Radio. Today we're doing awesome archaeology and discoveries to amaze.
Oh my god, that was a voice crack. Yay.
It was off mic. You're off mic.
So thank god.
It wasn't heard.
Yeah, thank god, for real. Paul, can I get them claps? We got them claps?
No, I don't.
No, you better
have this thing.
You better find
Freemasons
it.
Freemasons run the country! There you
go. Those are the claps that
classic,
we play.
Right. Classic. Before we get to the ancient tiny skull of a Kermit fossil, let's take some phone calls. I got Jim. What's going on, Jim?
Hi, guys. I was just thinking about the 53-year-old cadaver found in the Alps, frozen stiff. He's perfectly preserved. They call him Bootsy.
Okay.
And what's interesting about him is he was shot in the back with an arrow. And it just makes me think of how many Homo sapiens have been shot in the back since the beginning of time. Anyway, you guys have a good weekend. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Jim.
The ancient art of shooting someone in the back.
Yeah, right. Betraying somebody. No honor.
Yes, go walk further in the snow, my friend.
Yeah, we're just going out to hunt. Yeah. We're just going out to hunt.
I want to show you something in the caves here.
They're not going to tell you what they're hunting.
You go got first. One over there. Yeah. Check it out.
That's crazy.
Let's get one more phone call. And we got Tim and Lombard. What's going on, Tim?
Yeah, good show, guys. I want to tell you about an archaeological experience I had a couple years ago. I was down in southern Illinois backpacking with my daughter. And in the Shawnee National Forest.
Yeah.
Right? We're camping. We're backpacking there. Camp at night. And there's, like, spiders everywhere in our headlamp. Like, little itty-bitty little, you know, little wolf spiders.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, oh, it was really creepy. Anyway, next day we get up. We have breakfast. We check out this archaeological site in, it was like one of these old stone forts that the Native Americans had made.
Is that near Cahokia?
It's not a general area, but a little further and more in the Shawnee National Forest.
Okay.
Anyway, we check out this thing, and they had not so much drawings, but actually carvings they put into the rock. And one of the carvings they had on the rock, all these carvings of spiders.
Mm.
And it's like my daughter and I look at each other, and it's like, yeah, I know why that Native American 1,000 years ago put that carving in that stone.
Right.
It was just a cool experience that we both had this like cosmic link of what mm-hmm. they had experienced, and then we had just recently experienced. It was really, really a wonderful feeling.
That is cool, because you're connecting back to somebody who had that same thought, so much so that they're like, man, I'm carving. I wonder if almost is like a warning, even. Like, yeah. You know, if you would have saw that first, it's like, hey, just let you know, there's a lot of spiders here.
Right. Look, it kind of makes me wonder what from our centuries, you know, will be discovered however long ago. And like, because that is absolutely connected with somebody who saw those spiders. And
what does word stop everywhere?
Right, exactly. What does this stop? Oh, that's cool, though. Thanks for the story, Tim.
All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah. Bye. Yeah, that's pretty cool, though. I'm seeing something.
It actually, like, exists like that?
Yeah. Yeah, no,
absolutely. I feel like, though,
I have, like, the same thought that somebody had, you know, 1,000 years ago in the same space.
Absolutely. It's almost like, I mean, the linkage of time, right? Like, we can go on forever, right? But in many ways, time, is it cyclical, right? Like, mm-hmm. many of these things that, especially some things that you'll have happen in your life, right? Like, a split-second decision may alter whether you're here or not, right? And mm-hmm. so, when you kind of think about that, like, what happens if you did choose to make the other choice? Like, I mean, we can go into the discussion of higher powers as well, right, with that. But, but with that, I kind of think that maybe there is, like, I don't know, like, time, multiverse, all these other things. Our understanding of it is very face level, right? Like, we were talking about the internet earlier, and I mean, it might be a lot deeper than that. Then maybe, you know, I don't know how to connect it back to specifically the spiders, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That
the web... You're talking about, you know, the internet.
Yeah, that's a pun.
The World Wide Web, spiders. See, it all connects.
It all does connect. Yeah, man. Nah, I mean, I don't know. Who knows those things that we put out there?
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely feel whenever I go to archaeological sites, you can kind of, you feel this presence. You do feel, at least I do, and I've heard from others that feel the same. You feel the energy of the people that were there or something, you know. And everyone that I've been to, Mexico, Ireland, Malta, and you just feel this energy. It's like you feel the presence of the people that were there, especially when you're looking at objects and buildings that they created and petroglyphs
and
they carved.
Newton's law of thermodynamics, that energy can never be created nor destroyed, mm-hmm. right? So in many ways, even us, we re-enter the earth and are recycled through the worms and the dirt and all the other creatures. And so, I don't know, it kind of makes you wonder how many humans have had these like experiences, and then how, even though we're separated by quote unquote different time periods, are we really, you know, that different?
Yeah.
Now that's a grant. Absolutely, we are different, right?
But I think on a
metaphysical level, who knows?
Yeah, and I think even on a base level, I mean, I talk about it a lot when I do the archaeology shows. It's one of the things I kind of, whenever I'm in these ancient places or even just reading about them, I always think about the commonality of people. You know, if you go in Pompeii, they had. Where it's all the people with volcanic ash and everyone's kind of frozen in time. There's literally streets of restaurants and cafes, like food vendors. And there's mosaics on the wall of kind of like the animals that they would serve. It's like a menu, you know, and you think about, wow, the same thing that we do now. We walk down the street and we look, hey, let's go to this restaurant, go to this. They were doing that thousands of years ago.
So you're going on bar crawls with your friends in ancient Rome. Absolutely.
It's I always want to know, like, you know, where was the falafel spot that Jesus ate?
Yeah, for real. Ain't that the truth?
And since we're tied, see, now I'm sticking in the Middle East. Or, you know, that area, Africa, Middle East, falafel, right? Mm-hmm. The home of falafel, we think, is Egypt. Mm-hmm. Okay. And physicists now think they finally figured out how the Egyptians built the pyramids.
Oh, that's a connection. I like that. I thought you were going to talk about how they fried the falafels and whatnot, bro.
Well, they did make them out of fava beans originally.
Really?
Not keeping chickpeas. It Mediterranean.
Yeah exactly.
That is very interesting.
We, you know, weave the web, see?
Mm-hmm.
But but I always find these funny because it's like, they finally figured it out. And then until, you know, five, 10 years, then someone's going to be, we finally figured it out. And it's something else, you know.
Yeah, right.
But it's an interesting hypothesis. So they believe through studying the ancient hieroglyphs and they believe they figured out the mystery of how they managed to build the amazing Great Pyramids. And the scientist, led by Dr. Daniel Bond, focused on a wall painting in the tomb of Jehutuhotep, I think is how you say it. I'm not sure. So it's
the judges will accept that.
Yes, absolutely. Give him the claps, Paul.
It's DJ. DJ.
Freemasons run the country.
There you go. And actually, Freemasons did learn from the... You know, it's all from the ancient Egyptians,
pyramid
builders.
Nah, absolutely. See?
But this guy, unless I'm reading it wrong, and his name is actually DJ Ahutatotep. So he's the original Egyptian DJ.
I might steal that.
Translates to the great chief of the hair gnome.
Of the hair gnome? that's even harder. Wait a minute. Hold on.
And the painting, which dates all the way back to about 1900 B.C., depicts 172 men moving a statue with ropes attached to a sledge. And in front of the sledge, water can be seen being poured over the sand. So the physicists, they decided to give the process a try for themselves. And they built a massive pyramid. No, they didn't go to Egypt. They decided to do a smaller scale version. And the team discovered if sand is dry, it can end up developing clumps that make moving objects more difficult. But if you add just the right amount of water, the liquid prevents clumps and makes the sand smoother. Bond told Life Science at the time, if you use dry sand, it won't work as well, but if the sand is too wet, it won't work either. There's an optimum stiffness. Prior to the discovery, it was thought the pouring of water in the painting was a purely ceremonial act rather than a key part of the construction process. And so we'll see if that...
So they're saying it was more...
Originally they thought this, you know, painting depicted kind of ceremonial, like the pouring of the water, like kind of, you know, like holy water, you know, like a, you know, before you build a pyramid, we pour the water kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
right? The blessed water. And now they believe, no, this is actually a process.
Oh, there was allowing
them to
help.
This was the way they were able to drag the stones, you know, such a far distance as they would pour water to smooth the sand over and make it easier to pull and stack up and stuff.
Absolutely.
I mean, it makes sense, but we'll see. Like I said, if in another, you know, 5 years,
somebody's going to
No, actually, you know, because I've seen another one that was interesting where they
just threw down a couple bags of Portland cement, you know, and just
got to work.
Yeah.
They put in that work.
But I know there's another one, I don't know if it correlates to this, but it did also involve water, and they believe that the Nile actually went more inland at the time, and so they would use the water from the Nile to kind of float the big stones up. You know, and kind of like create a kind of like a levee kind of thing. And, you know, and you'd like let the water sink and then, you know, you'd let it rise up, make it the stones float up and then let the water sink down, you know, and keep doing that process.
OK, so kind of like almost the way in which we utilize the Panama Canal, right? And that you're kind of lowering. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something like that.
In a way, you're kind of utilizing the water level to transport the bricks. I mean, they could have used both, really.
For sure. I mean, exactly. It could be both, you know. Water makes sense.
And also, I mean, just in thinking about how we do things, you know, kind of going back to the same, there could have been a lot of different ways these different pyramids kind of as they progressed over
time.
You know, I don't know if they put that in there, but
Yeah, because like they're, well, yeah, and there's pyramids older, you know, and then they're like other pyramids in Nubia, south of Egypt, mm-hmm. that are also built in a different way, so.
Interesting.
Yeah,
yeah, the Nubians, I gotta kind of, I want to definitely read more.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, they don't really get talked about that much, but there's a bunch of pyramids down there, too. They're not as big as the Great Pyramid.
Now, would that be in modern-day Sudan, or where is
I believe
that?
So, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
I think
North
so,
North
yeah.
Sudan, I'm guessing?
Southern, well, south? I know it's south down the Nile.
Okay.
So, wherever that is, my geography is
yeah.
not super
Yeah, I kind of know Africa is in that kind of...
I know archaeology,
Egypt,
but not
Morocco
geography.
Up there. It's like Sudan. I feel like mm-hmm. maybe... No, Algeria is still northern Africa, but like kind of as we go south.
Yeah.
Is Chad down there maybe? Yeah, the Democratic Congo.
I don't know.
That's a question for Google is what that's a question
No, there you
for.
Go. Look it up while I talk about
what,
the...
What do you want to know about Africa?
No, I just want to know where the Nubian nation resided.
Hold well, on. Yeah, well, where was it? What do we have? Let's get like a...
Right oh, I don't know. Oh, we're talking about Nubia. But while you look that up, I'm going to talk about the Kermit fossil. Researchers found a tiny skull with wide eyes and a cartoonish grin that reminded them of the lovely frog Kermit. This amphibian fossil is actually 270 million years old. So it's older than the dinosaurs. And they named it Kermitops gratus.
Kermitops gratus.
Yeah, in honor of Kermit the Frog, because it's like the way it fossilized, it has a weird kind of smile and big eyes, so it kind of looks... I think that's what it originally looked like, but because of the fossilization...
Oh, the way it was like, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of okay. like got smooshed and, yeah.
True. That's always very interesting as well, the recreation of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because while we're on that top, I also looked it up. It's northern Sudan. We were
okay.
Right. And, but have you heard how they recreate the sounds which the T-Rex and these other dinosaurs make by, like, flooding air through the chambers? Which
oh, wow.
It's like they don't sound like
I heard one they did
Park.
With a pharaoh. Was,
yeah. The pharaoh like, one was good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, it kind of sounds... Like kind of almost like a big alligator, you know, with the
okay.
hissing, but the rumbling and all that. I mean, granted, there people are adding
it's
sound
not,
effects,
yeah,
you
for
know,
sure.
But kind of it's almost more. I don't know. It'd be definitely more frightening to see a 50-foot tall lizard about
right.
to eat you. Right, you're a primate with a rock or a spear. Lord have mercy. Scale that tree.
The one thing cool about the Kermitops is actually shows. That it's probably the origins of modern amphibians and that the origins of modern amphibians are a little more complex than some research has led on throughout the years.
Interesting. So is this like one of the ancestors that link between them going on land?
Yeah, like it's a link between, the ancient, yeah, because it's not technically a frog. They called it a...
The primordial fish that walked on land. Is this fish the reason why I pay taxes? Is that what you're telling me right now? It's amphibian?
Yes.
Are you the reason?
Wait, no, I love that. Like the guy, the fish crawling on the land. Like, this is the guy. This is the reason I got to go to work today.
This is the guy.
Yeah. It's said better. Differently, but translated for the radio.
That's right.
Real quick before we go to break. I know I talked about there was another discovery at Easter Island. Which I thought was kind of interesting. There was a new study that used radiocarbon dating to assess the age of four Rongorongo tablets. Now, that's a cool band name, Rongorongo.
Rongorongo tablets, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And
take some Rongorongo tablets and go to the show. Yeah.
They originally believed that the early Easter Islanders or Repanuians got their language or developed a language influenced by Europeans, but now using the radiocarbon dating on these tablets, it shows they actually had this written language before the Europeans got there. And so they believe that was about, let me see, the first people that landed on Rapa Nui first lie on the between 1150 and 1280 CE, and they lived in isolation until the arrival of the Dutch navigator Jacob Roggeveen.
Let's
go. 1722.
Shout out the Dutch people.
Let's go. So, yeah, that is kind of cool. So the yet undeciphered script known as the Rongorongo is now believed to be older than when the Europeans got there. See?
Interesting. Take that.
Take that, colonizer. Are we going to take a quick break when we get back? Uh Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. Today we are talking about all the amazing anthropological, paleontological, I don't know if that's actually how you say that word, but and archaeological discoveries, because it's awesome archaeology time on Think Theory Radio.
Yes, sir.
And imagine finding a shipwreck worth $17 billion.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Talk about treasure, you know.
Like, yeah, for real.
They say it's the most valuable treasure in the history of humanity. The history of humanity.
Yeah, right, yeah, the most grandiose. Yeah, it's always the largest discovery, right. The biggest thing.
Yep. Yeah, somebody's got to get clicks on their article.
The ship was called the San Jose.
Okay, so it was like a Spanish explorer?
Yeah, but it was sunk by British warships in 1708. And it has a cargo including 11 million gold coins,
wow.
200 tons of silver and emeralds.
How did the ship not sink?
Right.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Colombian authorities will begin to the recovery of the 316-year-old shipwreck, which is valued at $17 billion. Several agencies in Colombia will work to recover the San Jose, which is a 150-foot-long Spanish galleon ship.
Mm.
And the vessel contained so much money.
Imagine how many people died, right, just for that stuff, and then for it just to sit in the bottom of an ocean.
For 300 years.
Yeah, right? That's crazy.
Hey, speaking of ships, what's a pirate's favorite letter?
R.
I wonder. I don't know.
No, it's a rite of passage from the king.
Oh, it's a rite of...
So, oh, that's a meta joke.
Oh, that
there.
Is absolutely. It took me a minute. Oh, that's a good one. Paul, give yourself the clap.
No, I saw it. I saw it definitely for sure. But yeah, no, I like that.
And then, kind of talking about metal, but not gold coins and silver and emeralds. A metal detectorist unearths extraordinary rare medieval artifact. Also, metal detectorist, I feel like, would be a good TV show.
The metal detectorist.
Now, are we talking about somebody who like is like testing people's chains to see if they're real or fake? Or what are we talking about? He just like detects metal?
Yeah. You could go. There's a lot of ways you could go with it.
See, this I was thinking true. Like some this dork true. On a beach, like that's just like always yeah. looking.
It would be that, but then, you know, you Hollywoodize it. So it's like some, you know, model esque looking actor.
Is this a reality
who
show?
Solves
or a
crimes. No, it'd be so, like so, a drama. It's like he solves crimes.
True crime.
With this metal detector. Like, finding like.
You gotta have a dog.
CSI metal detector.
The metal detectorist. Starring Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, that's a Jake Gyllenhaal role. He's just losing his mind up in there.
Would have been a good Nicolas Cage one back in the day when he was younger.
That would be good.
So this is turning into a movie. I mean, unless you're going to get an A-lister to television.
Yeah, you're
it
right.
could happen.
I guess you're right. Well, it happened. It does happen. They event sometimes. Yeah.
You think
do.
We could get Don Cheadle?
Yeah, there you go.
What's he up to these days? He's got to be getting old.
Well, we could get Terrence Howard, because Don Cheadle kind of cheated Terrence Howard out of all that money. I mean, he might have cheated himself out of all that money, but that's something else. Don't sue me, Terrence Howard. I'm just saying. But
have you ever seen Terrence Howard's like crazy like physicist ideas and stuff?
No. That's perfect time. What is this? what's up with Terrence Howard's physicist?
Oh, he has like this whole idea that like 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2.
Oh, man. Oh, we got to dive into this now.
It's kind of nice. It's not the show for that. After the show, we can talk about that. But I can bring it to a different topic.
No, whatever topic you want, man.
How are you gonna transition it actually, from Terrence Howard is crazy?
Well, see, Terrence Howard thinks he's discovered this new physics.
Okay,
you know, and he develops these kind of weird science apparatus things and drones and stuff, and he has some company that he's like, it's very strange. He's been on all these talk shows talking about like, you know, that he was in college to be a physicist, and when he. You know, went against the grain and said that 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2. Like they kicked him out or something like that. And then they became an actor.
Gosh.
So science, archaeology, where does it meet when an incredibly rare astronomical object is found to have markings in multiple languages? So I don't know if you know what an astrolabe is.
No, no. What is that?
So it's what they used to use to kind of forecast or figure out constellations and planet rotations. They're really cool looking. If you look up Astrolabs, the Antikythera mechanism was a very advanced one. But they used them to kind of chart the heavens. And, you know, it was basically consisted of a map of a sky with rotating parts, and it allowed the users to calculate their position in time and space. It was used for navigation, for astronomy, astrology. And this one that they found this one dates back to 11th century Spain. And it's been around forever, but this historian, Frederica Gigante of the University of Cambridge, rediscovered the astrolabe and the inscriptions in an Italian museum in Verona. And she actually figured out that there was this scientific exchange between Arabs, Jews, and Christians over hundreds of years. And basically, this astrolabe passed hands through all these different people, and they would inscribe new kind of, you know, mathematical, whatever, you know, different translations of the old things. So there's Hebrew on there. There's ancient Arabic. There's, you know, European languages, I think Italian or something. So there's all these different, you know, so it's a cool relic in a way that it shows how ancient people worked together, especially in the scientific realm.
Absolutely.
There wasn't as much
was
division.
It that or of all the different empires that probably came through there?
No, it actually, like, it's, well, according to her, she believes that actually, like, it was kind of passed on from these different people.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
I don't know. I think overall it's a testament to humanity, though, how, you know, continuing to build off of what other people have learned, whether you took it or.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah. Or right, right. Well, yeah. There's definitely that, for sure. And yeah, it's some of the, it's really cool because some of them are Arabic inscriptions of Muslim prayer lines. And then there's some Hebrew in there. There's some English. Yeah, it's interesting. It's really cool looking, though. If you look it up, it's like, it's really big, kind of looks like a medallion and all these cool inscriptions. Very esoteric. I want one.
That's a beautiful vocab word as well, esoteric.
Oh, yeah, it's one I think I say like every episode. And then sticking with technology, but also archaeology, and what happens when construction gets in the way, or archaeology gets in the way of construction. Archaeologists discover 6,000-year-old burial mounds at a future Intel site. You know, Intel, the computer company.
Oh, I thought you were talking about
Intel, yeah. Like CIA.
Like a three-letter agency, yeah. See why they got those.
Well, I wonder who developed Intel.
Uh-oh. It's just like firing the bodies out of a cannon. Yeah.
Well, don't they make like processors or?
Yeah.
So, you know, already aren't they like mining things anyway?
Absolutely.
Silicon or whatever to. Yeah.
Especially in Africa and all that, the battery industry and all those other things. I mean, it's very.
Oh, lithium, cobalt.
And China is very into that as well. They're like, I think they're the biggest battery producers, and they have very large inroads into many of these African countries, which I don't know. I mean, truthfully, especially the way we're trying to go with electric cars, I mean, that would be a perfect way. We talk about like really building upon American, you know, prosperity, but also in the world, right? Invest in other countries, right? That's. In many ways what China is doing, so I don't know. And not don't just go over there and take their stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, like go.
Well, that's kind of what they're doing. I mean, it's
absolutely right. Isn't that the other thing is that they're kind of building some of these things on credit, it seems like, in China or in Africa.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of like child labor going on. I mean, the Congo and Sudan is going through some horrible that no one talks about that's
been
going
in war
on
for like 30, 40 years, haven't they?
Yeah. But a lot of it, it's a proxy war, the United States and China, and it's all about these mines, the cobalt, lithium mines and stuff like that. But
back to Intel.
Back to Intel, an American technology multinational, by the way. They're planning to build two semiconductor factories in Uhlenberg, near central German city of Magdeburg. And they actually digging, they found it's a complex burial landscape from the Neolithic period or New Stone Age. And LDA archaeologists have been investigating the area since 2023 ahead of the construction of the Intel plants. Among the finds, researchers have identified two monumental burial mounds that are thought to date to about 6,000 years ago. The mounds, roughly about 650 feet away from each other, were constructed above wooden grave chambers, each containing several burials. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with this intel site that they're trying to build, because usually that kind of stops and halts things, and I don't know if they're going to build around it. I know that's happened, like, in Miami. There was there's a really cool, it's almost kind of like a Stonehenge, but it's not. It doesn't have the big stones, but this ring, like a stone ring circle that was found from the ancient, the indigenous tribe in Miami. And it was because they were building these high rises down near South Beach or whatever.
Right.
And once they found that, they had to halt it and, you know, turn it into a landmark.
Interesting.
So now it's like a little park. You can see the rings. And then there's all these like skyscraper high rise condos all around
it. Of course.
It's like right in the middle of them.
Well, and also, I mean, I feel like you need a whistleblower to even whistleblow on that. Like, how many things were just kind of built over, you know, monuments and or before it was
even
because, you know, I do know that at the turn of the century, like, I was at the Field Museum and I learned that, you know, a lot of these museums, they have a lot of different Native American indigenous remains on hand, right? That you can learn. If you go and you dig up one of these sites, right, you're going to many times find remains which enlighten you to, as you said, a lot of different things about their diet and their culture and all these other things. But then we kind of get into the murky waters of how do you return these peoples, you know, who does it go to, right? And then how do you go about swiftly expediting that, but also keeping the knowledge and actually learning about them and like cherishing that knowledge, but also not desecrating their bodies. I find that's a very fine line to toe, you know.
Well, there was that new federal law that just went into place to, like, they have to return all that stuff or get permission from the tribes to display it. They had to, I think even the Field Museum here had to cover up their displays, which I don't understand. Why, like, why didn't you just work that ahead of time instead of, like, well, now we have to cover these displays.
Yeah, right.
And, like, well, why don't you just, you knew the law was coming, just, I don't know.
You would think so, but I don't know. Sometimes these
things
are
politics behind it.
Reactionary rather than being proactive, right, you know?
And well, and speaking of, like, and what you're saying, too, about building over old indigenous things, in Chicago, there's believed that there was probably a lot of kind of mounds. And if you like the Serpent Mound in Ohio, and there's, like, the Cahokia Mounds downstate, there's Aslan up in Wisconsin. And they believe that here in Chicago, there were those kind of mounds as well. Mm-hmm. There was an old map from, I think, like maybe a surveyor or an archaeologist. And there was by Belmont and Sheffield, there was supposedly a serpent mound.
Okay.
That they just destroyed and built over.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Because somebody, Fields potentially, whoever it was like, no.
Yeah.
I need
And back then there wasn't that protection, you know.
No, absolutely not. If you paid the right amount of money, you know.
Which sucks too, because you think about it, it would be so cool if Chicago had the more, you know, tie to the indigenous heritage other than just kind of modern. You know, like we have the totem pole, but it's like a modern recreation.
Right, or
like
the statue of the Native American downtown,
right?
It pays homage, quote unquote, but it's not really. No, it doesn't. And I mean, that's just a symptom of our 1900s, how industrialization and like the Western mindset was that we are individualism and your exerting your will is the most American thing. And I think that you can even see that. And it is good to exert your will, right? Like the independence and the American, like, you know what I'm saying, entrepreneurship and ingenuity is beautiful. But at the same time, right, we kind of anything can be good and or bad. And, you know, you take it to these excesses, right?
When
you look at capitalism or the way in which, you know, like John D. Rockefeller and all these other people were just basically being criminals, you know, at the behest of, they just need to make money. That's kind of crazy. But I don't know. I think everything has those two sides to it, right? Because also the beauty of America, like there's a lot of things that absolutely I'm glad that we live in the era that we do today rather than like 100 years ago and be, you know, especially as a black man, you know, especially as a black
man. I didn't want to say that, but yeah.
No, absolutely. You know, and that's one of those things. You know?
I know. That's always like people are like, oh, it was better back. Like, really? Are you sure?
Man, you can order food to your house and cannabis is legal. Let's be real here. It's pretty decent.
Now, I do think there are elements of the past, especially in certain cities. And it's like if you think of Tenochtitlan, where the Aztecs were, you know, they had a very advanced city. They had their own sewer systems. They had running, like, well, running water, quote unquote. They had fresh water. They had floating gardens. They had just a very more ecological friendly city. And then the Spaniards came in, just destroyed everything, brought disease, and just created the more, at that time in Europe in the 1400s and 1500s, you know, you're talking about like, you know, the bubonic plague and all this, because they didn't have clean water. They didn't even, they would, you know, go to the bathroom in the same water they would drink. They didn't have the same kind of hygiene that existed in the, like, Aztec culture and ancient Egypt.
The Muslims, I believe, brought that over. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was
cleaning your hands,
Hannibal,
I believe.
Hannibal, you know, in Spain. Well, the Moors, and they went in Spain and brought a lot of this stuff. Now, I mean, there was ancient, like, in the ancient Celtics had a version of soap and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, the medieval times, you know, the, like, Europeans kind of went backwards and they were doing things, especially with the development of more modern cities. You know, we still have these problems today with our waste disposal and poison, you know, the like running water that's not clean, stuff like that.
Straight up,
know.
Putting fluoride. I mean, fluoride might be fine, but there's probably other things that we're doing now that we'll look back on in 50 years and be like, what were we thinking? Mm-hmm. You know,
so but the ancient Mayans and Aztecs would use plants and minerals to clean their water. But anyway, we're out of time. Get into that next thing. I want to thank everybody for listening. Another episode of Awesome Archaeology and Think Theory Radio right here on WCPT 820.